他们家就
不用吃饭就行。
Are you?
I just go after the show.
Are you drinking?
Yeah, I'm going to do
some.
Yeah,
what's the first thing you like?
Oh.
So first, starting with speakers business, just a couple things to remember. First thing, remember to have all your plates and dishes up there by 8 o'clock, if we go past 8 o'clock, because that's when it's all getting picked up. Second thing, this is our last meeting in this room. After getting some emails, I looked around and found a room that I think will better meet our needs in TELUS. So, okay. So we are going to be moving to TELUS 134. I'll send you all an email confirming that, so don't worry about remembering it, but just so you know. If you haven't signed a confidentiality agreement and you are a member of council, not a proxy or a guest, feel free to come up and sign one. And by feel free, I mean please do. Also, if you are, heads up, if you are resigning from a committee, you have to let me know, but also you should let the chair of the committee know. So send in your email, you can CC, you can send it to me and CC the chair or vice versa, but just please make sure you let both parties know. So in terms of our agenda, I'd like to point out to you the resignation of Louis Nguyen from the audit committee. Also, the appointment, as I mentioned last time, of Julia Jackson. Welcome, Councillor Jackson. And the last thing is I'll be moving item 2B from the late editions to take to the main agenda to take place as the first presentation. And that's all my announcements, so I'll go right ahead into attendance. President Yamagishi. President, or Vice President Chellen.
President.
Vice President Kuzmu.
Present.
Vice President Chima.
Present.
Vice President Sumar.
Yeah.
Governor Kelly.
Present.
Councilor Milner.
Present.
Councilor Kim.
Yeah.
Councilor McGinn.
Present.
Councilor Kinda.
Present.
Councilor Mills.
Present.
Councilor Hanwell.
Present.
Miss Black for Councilor Borden.
Present.
Councilor Lay.
Present.
Councilor Holt.
Here.
Councilor Smith.
Present.
Councilor Curlew. Councillor Lang?
Here.
Councillor Crone?
Present.
Councillor Babick?
Present.
Councillor Reitz?
Yep.
Councillor Carson?
Yep, present.
Councillor Chaudhry?
Present.
Councillor Champagne?
Please.
Councillor Jackson? You're here. Councillor Cucci-Cazill?
Yep.
Councillor Wynn?
Present.
Councillor Pham? Councillor Bowie?
Present.
Councillor Mumfries?
Present.
Councillor Hodgson?
Present.
Yeah, just let me. Goodness. Okay, so we're going to move right into Council! Come on. All right. So we're going to move right into presentations. So the first presentation is 89th Avenue Housing Project, presented by Ben Louie, University Architect, sponsored by Sadiq Sumar, Vice President of Student Life, is our seconder to this presentation. Councillor Smith. Is there any opposition to seeing this presentation? Seeing none, pass the floor over. You have 30 minutes.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, I can help you out too.
Sadiq and I will be entertaining viewers. This presentation is hopefully short and sweet about the development at 89th Avenue. So we would like to provide a presentation to SU Council before we present to FDC later on this week. I have six slides before showing the pictures, and these summarizes the goal, the deliverables, project site, challenges, opportunities, and the process. So this one talks about goals, where the first one set by the president, 25% of students on campus to be accommodated. Then it's part of the academic plan, student recruitment, retention, and achievement. Then it's community building, student life, and campus experience. It's also about resource stewardship, about reducing the deferred maintenance costs, smart growth and campus development for a healthy community, and integrated planning neighborhood with amenities at Garneau. The deliverables are on-campus residents and community, so it's both, for 244 graduate, international, and up-year students. Increase and improve the two-bedroom and four-bedroom suite product line in response to demand. I use the product line here because, there's quite a bit of need for that, those types of suites. Functional and attractive suite and floor layout with natural light. Interior and outdoor social space to support resident life programs, and a multi-purpose facility that connects to international public. Project site 89th Avenue, walkable transit station and amenities on 109th Street, on one's way in Sugar Bowl and other fancy places. At night, weekends, and so on. East Campus Village includes International House, up-year walk-ups, graduate student residents, and detached houses. So it becomes a really nice neighborhood. I think that's the idea of trying to sort of reinforce that. Challenges, balancing functionality, quality, student life, capital costs, operations and maintenance costs, and current appeal. We've actually worked on it quite successfully with the four buildings that we put up 2 years ago on 87th Avenue and 110th Street. So we think this is a continuation of leveraging those expertise. We have progressive project delivery schedule, September 2013 occupancy. So if you sort of drive by every week, you'll see progress, hopefully. Right now, we're only working on the pre-construction site services. We're still awaiting order and council approval for that to proceed. Balancing new development with preserving character of neighborhoods is important to the Garneau community. Infill development for design guidelines, preservation plan, and long-range development plan. Both campus and support site operational requirements, creating new outdoor social space without increasing parking. Opportunity, that's the more fun part. We have sustainable design as part of this, targeting Green Globe 4 stars, comparable to LEED Silver. Continue to develop East Campus Village into a vibrant student focused neighborhood. Student-friendly interior design, welcoming entrances, social spaces. We'll show you the design, and also connecting 88th Avenue, commons, and bicycle paths, and the multifunctional space. process, Sadiq and Colton and others have been involved together with PSA executives in project steering committee meetings, I believe every 2 to 3 weeks, at design stage and in selection of successful design builder. We actually did interview, did score and interview, so Sadiq was part of that. Together with university relations, we also work with the external community Gardo. We also had an open house, and I trust some folks from SU were there, including, was it? I know Colton was there, Sadiq, were you there? And so that was great. We actually submitted the demolition concept and site plan for the long range development plan to FDC in April for approval before we went out to hire the design builder. And we're submitting this to FDC for approval on Thursday. The suite layout, this one shows the 4-bedroom type. We're, I don't know whether it's easier for me to use this one. Yeah, then I can go both ways. The entry is from the corridor side, and then there is a more social communal space with a kitchenette, 2 washroom facility, and we learned from the graduate student residents, these showers will also be configured. And then also sinks, double sinks, 2 separate double sinks. So 4-bedroom, that's one type, and we work on the different layouts. Then we also have 2 bedrooms, and we have 2 conditions. One is putting the communal space in the middle, the shared space. And then the other type is to put it at the corner, and I'll explain to you the benefit for some of the locations to them. So they are actually quite generous, and on this side, we'll have natural light. And I don't know how many of you have been to the graduate student residences. We actually have quite large windows. They're actually quite bright inside, so we're using the same approach with these ones. So they will be filled with natural light and spacious. This is about how we combine those units and so on. So let me work on build block B first, which is the Easter Lee block. We have, as you can see, the entrance coming in from the 89th Avenue on the south side. A nice generous lobby space with windows that you can see directly to a courtyard when you enter. And this is south-facing, so again, the light in the winter time will, at noon time, will pass through to the whole entry lobby, so it makes it really natural, well-lit, and safe. You can see right through to the street, so we thought that was a great feature. We have social space that we're working on the details of the number of laundry machines and exercise and furniture, and Sadiq is part of that team. Then we have 2 bedroom suites where the social, the communal space is at the corner to benefit from, you know, the corner condition of windows. Here we have the 4 bedrooms where the communal space is in the middle. And we also, the consultant also is very careful to locate the social communal space to areas that may have a bit of sound and noise. So the bedrooms are actually away from those areas. And we have handicap access. And one feature that I really like is the hallway. At one end it's window, at the other end is window. So when you go outside of your room, you go out the hallway, it's natural light at the other 2 ends, very much like this building when we design it. And it really sort of helped us uplift that whole atmosphere of the building. So we were quite pleased with it. Setback-wise, we work with the setback of the street. For block A, it's actually a bigger block, and it actually has more 4-bedroom units. But again, it is coming through the north side, collects it in an area where it's adjacent to a social space, and also a connection out to the courtyard, back on the south facing the courtyard. There's also a connection to the multi-purpose room, and we are working towards, well, I mean, it is going to be connected. connected to my house. We'll have a kitchenette, storage area, and two unisex, very free washrooms there. But what's really wonderful is it not only does it have access to 111th Street, we want patio door entry to the courtyard with a fireplace in the middle. So it really will lend, and we'll try to get as much ceiling height as possible to this multifunctional social space. So one can imagine, this social space for building block A will connect to an outdoor social space, and Patty, I'll show you a landscape drawing later, to connect to an interior large social space that also connects to the conference room at my home. So it is connecting all these series of social spaces so that they can support all the functionality and opportunity, and yet working through planning to respect privacy and all those other important aspects. The design also is what we call infill development, which basically we're preserving two houses on the south side, two houses on the north side of scale and character, so that they create another plan I'll show you. Four houses of that period and scale and sort of contributing to the streetscape, and then four other houses on the side, and then these are doing quite nicely, we think. Landscape plan, we're keeping about 18 to 20 mature trees on Boulevard, and also where we can afford them, including a maple, and a typical maple that's typical of Garden community, a conifer, and these are all the trees, the ash trees along 89. We're keeping all those on 111, and we're actually supplementing them with a whole bunch of plant material. Courtyard space, we'll show you pictures with a pergola and arbor with plant material and paving material there. And then this area also gathering place for tables or for seats, so outdoor social space. Nice pictures of Block B, 3.5 stories above grade, half a story below grade with a window. They are not the walk-up type of the Graduate Student residents, but they actually do have a very generous entry porch with seats built in. That would be a nice place to wait for someone, to meet someone. We work with a lot of architectural detailing and articulation, fitting into the character of the neighborhood, and also being, a nice home for students to move in. This is another different angle, and also evening time or winter term. There's still leaves there. But one can imagine, when it is dark, how these big windows, social spaces, and you can see through the entrance to the hallway to the back courtyard, all, in line, is great. And also at these places, you can actually see the hallway. I mean, as with graduate student residents, I don't know whether you notice, you can actually look into the hallway, because it has natural light, there's inside, outside, visual connection. This is the courtyard area that we think is going to be so lovely. when it's in bloom, when students are elsewhere, children's season, that would be wonderful. So we really think that will really bring community together. I hope you don't mind I talk like this. When we work on Block A, it's actually one story higher. It is part of the design guideline, but we actually introduced the men's art room design. We have a staircase, break out the scale, and the curb appeal is we're designing it with articulation, so that when you look at the other, like this view, it looks like row houses were, even though we have the single entry point, we built these porch-like canopies to them, so they actually will have a rhythm. It has a scale. It really will enhance, the experience of the whole neighborhood. We also create a small part service space for people, for students to meet and to wait and to enjoy looking at the law buildings or other buildings to come. I don't know why I want to do that. And this is another view of how we articulated the design so that it feels like, you know, two buildings that's disconnected with entry porch. Also has a really nice courtyard, nice entry, welcoming, well-lit entry point. This is looking at the connecting link building, we call it. And then the next picture shows you how, you know, we pick up from the vocabulary and actually introduce more to the International House, and how this can be a real asset for the whole neighborhood, for social gathering, and so on. So, and the last one is a site plan to then put it all in context with International House, the walk-ups, graduate student residents, fraternity houses, and also these 89 cabin student residences. That's the presentation.
Are there any questions? Councillor Hodgson?
I just had two questions. I live in building number 9 right now. So I was wondering when demolition will finish, roughly?
3.5 days, roughly.
Okay.
Weather, dependent on weather.
Okay. And then they're kind of like the construction merchants have been doing stuff on our lawn. I was wondering if the university has plans to like repair our lawn or not, or okay.
Well, the winter's gone, right? The spring's here. We are going to have that consultation to keep everybody apprised. We have a communication plan developed, and you know, let us know if there are other issues that we missed. But Sadiq is there to make sure that we address the student population given the whole East Campus building hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Wolf?
I just saw in one of the courtyards there was like a wooden structure with slats on top. I was wondering what that is.
It's the fancy word is pergola. So it's basically it's a covering that you see the sky, so it kind of go up there. It's just a nice welcoming feature. That it's an arbor that you walk underneath, and it is a bit of a entry point up. You are entering the residence.
Okay.
It's a very gentle way and a welcome way to mark that's the residence.
Great place for weddings.
Are there any other questions? Councilor Babick?
I know this question perhaps is not too relevant to this particular development, but I'm wondering for future developments, how or why is it so important to keep the character of the neighborhood alive? I mean, the pictures look great, and you know, I'm not saying they're going to be ugly, but again, this is just my personal sort of thing. I'm kind of expecting the university to come up with like, you know, a nifty design, something very modern, or something interesting to the students, rather than sort of propagating this sort of stuffy, staunchy old look.
Very good question. we also heard similar questions. There was a bit of sensitivity with the construction of the International House with the community, that following that, a design guideline was produced that sort of guide all development. And in essence, because there is such a sensitivity with regard to the community, who takes great pride in their neighborhood, basically, it is included in that design guideline that respecting the character of the price of that division is the desirable one, as well as the window size and all that other stuff. So what I did not show you here, which Andy will see as a member of FBC on Thursday, is a whole 6-page document on how we're actually working within those guidelines and how we're being criticized from the Garneau community about we're not going as far back to building traditional arts and craft houses. We're trying to strike a balance, so I appreciate your question. We do have a design factor we're working with it.
No, that's fair enough, and I definitely appreciate wanting that. It was just, I was under the impression that the university expropriated all that land years and years ago. So basically, I'm not sure what is sort of clamping down on us or on the university to follow any guidelines.
I think being respectful of your neighbor is always a good thing, so I think we're working with it.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Councillor Lay?
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. My question is this in regards to the completion date of the project.
Sorry,
completion date.
Completion date?
Completion date. Occupancy September 2013.
So what Ben's trying to say is that well, it everything becomes very complicated right now because we have to get approval from the government to actually move forward with this project. Similar to the POS Center project, we haven't got that approval yet, as far as I know. The plan was for the building to be substantially complete. Substantial, was it? It would basically
be. Our
desire is to have it complete before students start to move back in. That's what we want. The timelines are getting very, very crunched up right now. In the graduate residence, what ended up happening was, as far as I know, once again, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was done to substantial completion, or I'm not sure what the technical term is, but basically there were a few things that needed to be fixed in certain units that people went into and just sort of did a little bit of fixing and it was done. Obviously, that's not the most desired outcome for us in terms of the team that's like on the steering committee. Our desire is to have it done to full completion before students start to move in, but students need a place to live, right? So if it's like a little bit of patchwork, then I don't think it's a huge problem, but like I said, our preference is full completion before students start to move back.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, sure.
I think one of the concerns that came up when grad student residential being built was some students had construction workers like using their toilets and walking their cars and stuff. So I think we've learned a lot from a few of the mistakes and things to improve on from the last time. So we've made it a very large concern with the development team to make sure this doesn't happen this time. So I think that even though it might be quite a struggle to have people moving into a space that is not quite complete and needs a few last minute touches, that we'll do this in a way that's respectful for the community.
If I may add, the fortunate thing is the builder and the architects are the same what we did the graduate student residents, and they have learned from all of the complaints. And the university totally is standing behind security and safety in terms of the not let alone the inconvenience of workers going into the residence room. So we don't think that would. We should have that again, but again, we haven't got approval to start, and then the POP is completed. So I would not be genuine if I say it will be done. We're trying to respect getting it all done before students move in.
And I think to the team's credit, I think we're doing everything we can, sort of prior to that approval. We're sort of working within those confines to do everything we can to make sure the project is still done on time. So, yeah. Vice President Kuzmin? Oh, sorry.
So, hopefully it's not just the sub-building that has a fireplace. We hope you have an indoor outdoor.
Vice President Kuzmin?
So I have three really small questions. And I think you might have presented these facts at some earlier presentations as well, but it's just more from memory. First one is, what's the cost of the entire project? The second thing is, I think you said this would house 244 students.
That's the bed count there.
Oh, and so what would that amount to a percentage increase in the amount of students living on campus? I think right now it's 14-17%, and Dear 125. And the third question is, when exactly was the inception, I guess, of this project? The inception of this project, the inception, conception. When was this project conceived? Is what I'm going to say.
Okay, I'll try to answer them. And
sure.
The first question has to do with the cost. We have established a budget, a hard cost construction budget. Sadiq was part of the team. Our winning proposal, I'm not going to reveal the number because it's a competition, but they were under budget. Okay, Sadiq knows the number, but
yes.
Expecting, I'm not sure we have signed the contract yet because we're working with it. So, but it is under budget, and Sadiq was part of that team making that decision. So it's good news.
Hmm?
You want to add to that with the budget?
No, like, okay. Yeah.
So the second one is, the second question is, how much is it increasing? East Campus Village presently has 700, if I am correct. With that number, I got that number from Resident Services right now. So this is adding 244.
Yep.
So, you know, that, you know, we're increasing, but we will target 1,500 beds in East Campus Village.
Okay.
Which is basically doubling the present. My understanding is we're at about 11.5%. So we're doubling, essentially we're working towards doubling it, right, to 25. And the third question is about...
Pretty much when did you start working on this?
I don't have a date. We started working on the possibility after we graduated student residence.
Okay, cool.
Councillor Carson?
Oh, it was the same question. I was just wondering how many years it's been in, like, in motion from the proposal to today.
6 months.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, it's just like, we got to get it done. The president basically wants these products on campus. We try to do it as quickly as possible.
So is this kind of being fast-tracked because the president is behind it then?
It's not just the president. I'm using that position as, it is very much part of the priority of
I think
kind of assets we want to get. Increase on
to speak to that a little bit, in the last few years, the U of A put out a white paper on residents, which basically their goal, I think, was to, like what Ben was saying, basically double the number of beds that were on campus. So in terms of this project, we've always wanted to increase the resident occupancy of our campus. So there, like Ben, I think Ben was trying to say this, is that there really hasn't been a solid date in terms of when they started working on this. It's sort of always been in the works to try to continue to increase the number of residents that live on campus. Basically.
And if I may add, these ones are actually, you know, they're newer, brighter, more pleasant, more functional. We learned from all the other lessons. So, I mean, these residences will really be, hopefully,
we got 2.5 minutes left. Governor Kelly?
Just really quickly, maybe you mentioned this, maybe I just didn't hear, but like how many of these new beds are for undergrads or are all of them?
We have a little work on it. You know, that it would work for undergraduate students, international students, and graduate students. My understanding is that international students have a There are groups who actually like four bedrooms. We don't have enough four bedroom types, only a couple, and then those are really sort of, it's a different vintage. My sense is graduate students also like two bedrooms, and I think with undergraduate students up the years, it's between two bedroom and four bedroom in these two buildings. So I think that's the basis of us working through this.
Okay, and so it also just like, in terms of, is that all on university land? And like,
yes.
What's going to happen to buildings 33, 29, 9, and 12 in the long run? Like, is there plans or is obviously...
We'll be keeping them and we're trying to work with adaptive reuse to see what makes sense. In terms of our sector planning, we identified that for 29 and 30. Well, 33 is deemed for demolition. We're going to relocate or build another one on that site, but we may be expanding the site of 29 at the south side.
Just to give you an idea, if you guys go down 87, if you guys look at the graduate residence walk-ups, there are still a few houses in there. So it's basically the same idea, except this time we don't want to just leave it as a lone house. It'd be nice to have two houses instead of just one, just block.
Two on each side, so there'll be four, right? So
yep.
It creates a nicer feel. Mm-hmm.
Councillor Wynn.
I think it looks really nice and fancy and stuff, but my question would be, I don't know, relevant, how affordable it's going to be to students. Is it going to be open to like people with money or people like you know, all kind?
Thanks.
I'm not the business guy for
I think we'll as a student union, we'll definitely advocate for as affordable housing as possible. I mean, even if I didn't want to advocate for it, it's in the political policy, so I'm required to. But like, obviously, I want as like housing that's as affordable for students as possible. The fact that the project might get moved back is placing some constraints. But like as myself working on this particular project, as well as Colton and the future executive team, hopefully. We'll work on making sure that the residence rates are affordable for all students, not just the upper echelon. I guess that's what your question was referring to.
Councillor Lay.
My question was asked.
Okay, that's all the questions in our 30 minutes. Did you guys want to say anything in America?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks. Okay, so next we have a APIRG presentation presented by It's Daily, Outreach Coordinator at APIRG, sponsored by Petros Kuzbu. Is there a seconder to this presentation? Councilor McGinn, is there any opposition to seeing this presentation? Nope. Okay.
If you want to have a tools that they need to become active citizens and to participate effectively in their communities.
meaning we're not necessarily doing the specific community work, but we're giving students access to the tools, helping them learn how to do things, teaching them skills, sort of where the support for it, not necessarily the people doing the work itself. And so that's sort of how we focus what we do. And then this large amount of text is really pretty much the integral backbone of what we do support and how we support it. So APER considers an equitable environment to be part of positive social change. We acknowledge that social change is achievable, and we see social awareness as a valuable facet of the public interest. We see anti-oppression as a process that acknowledges the existence of systemic oppression, including, but not limited to, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, classism, and ableism. Through practices and policies, we seek to actively identify, challenge, and address oppression wherever it exists, in all of its various forms, and to actively encourage opportunities for social awareness to change. Further, we recognize and respect that systems of oppression interact in different ways and affect each person differently. So those two statements are really what guide what happens, or what APER supports, and how we sort of move through the world as an organization.
APER provides support and services in the following ways. Direct granting. We have two funding rounds per year where groups can apply to two different funding groups. One for events and projects and training, and one for working groups. Actual things that can be hard to get access to.
I wrote the presentation, and Amina is presenting it. Between the two of us, it's my responsibility.
I can. Okay, so in terms of like in-kind services and things that we provide to students, we have digital recorders, button makers, photocopiers, computer software. Last year, we purchased a PA sound system that we lent to student groups and for a fee, as well as a digital camcorder. Knowledgeable staff and a network of knowledgeable people to offer training and advice, and opportunities for skill development and training through APER projects or connections with other organizations that APER partners with.
So we're really trying to grasp different aspects, not only like sort of tactical support, the logistics, so those like, do you have a voice recorder, do you have the means, the photocopier, you need to be able to get this information out to students or to engage with your communities, but also saying, do you need help getting connected in with people who are already doing it? Do you need help sort of formalizing your ideas? The staff would have some experience in that, so there's sort of different ways to get at it that are really valuable to students.
Who is APER? APER is all undergraduate students at the U of A who have not opted out of the APER dedicated fee. Community members are those who have purchased a yearly membership. Community members are grad students, U of A faculty and staff, and members of the broader community. Board of directors who are responsible for overseeing all APER operations and setting APER decisions, and staff who implement decisions made by the board.
Those are the three staff, so if you see us around, you're always welcome to ask us questions or ask how we are.
So we have a board. Nomination packages, one for APER friends, should be available starting December 1st. So the APER board of directors consists of 9 undergraduate students elected in March of each year. All of you the undergrads who have not opted out of the APER PR are eligible to run for the board. City Council appoints one of its members to sit on the board of directors. Mike.
And like that's really integral in support to APER to maintain relationships with the SU and really for us to be working together. I think that's something that is really important to emphasize, and having someone sit on our board is a like, really great use for us to feel connected to the SU.
Board responsibilities. Board oversees all APER operations, set annual priorities and budgets, review funding applications, develop and maintain policy, outreach to the community, hire and recruit staff, commit at least 3 hours a week, and attend bi-weekly board games. Attend 3 1.5-hour day retreats, which are really fun. So the board works in conjunction with the staff to make APER run, and as you can see, the board has a lot of responsibility in the daily operations of APER.
So here's the like super exciting stuff, right? So what legislation governs the APER? So APER sort of exists in multiple ways, or is governed by multiple things. First of all, APER has its own bylaws. We also, every year, We're also governed by the two SU bylaws, so that's 6,000 and 3,000, which make us an external PD recipient and a Class B PD recipient. So, another really important question to understand is how is APERG accountable to students? Because we are mandated to the undergraduate population, and that's where our primary focus goes. We're a democratic organization, so we run elections every year. We're directly accountable to the students at the U of A. So any student can run. All students are members unless they opt out. And all board meetings and general meetings are open to the public. It's basically our goal is to be as connected with students because democracy fits exclusively in with our mandate too. So it's not only simply a process of how we have to function as a DMU, but also as it fits or is required by the way that we understand our goals as an organization. Also, I'm sorry about that color on that we keep audited financial records, which we release, and we produce the annual report, which is just being finished up right now. We'll make sure we get last year's annual report over to the SU for you guys to consider, but we do every year produce one that goes on and off campus.
Where does APERG get it from? Dedicated units as part of our annual student fees. So we get $3.22 per term for full-time students and $1.62 per term for part-time students. We also have small revenues from funds. Occasionally, apply for government grants and partner with other organizations to put on events. The increase with CPI is step one in bylaw 2000.
So yeah, step grants sometimes come for like, this year we had like a library student who's helping us in our library, so we're trying to connect in different ways that we can support students to turn their learning into really practical things that also help us too.
Students who are philosophically opposed to APERG or cannot afford to dedicate to the unit can opt out of the fee and receive a full refund. APERG advertises opt-out in Gateway, on CGSR, at club fairs, and in class presentations, and posting around camps.
And also, it is on our website and on Facebook. As of this year or last year, you can now opt out online too, which is really, we're trying to increase the accessibility of it. So. It's like the donut without sprinkles that ran into a donut. So basically, primarily our money comes from student fees. When APERG first started out, we used to make revenue a lot more from events and other like community events, but really we found that didn't fit within the notion of accessibility and financial accessibility. So our goal as an organization is usually for everything that we do to be free so that all students and community members can access it. So that's why you see there's such a low other revenue that isn't really there. But that's because we're really trying to fit our practices in with our mandate. So how do we eat that donut? Sort of reaching a really bad running analogy. Direct granting, we give about $30,000 a year to students. We do two funding rounds. One is ending this Friday, the next one will come up in January. We do programming, which are workshops, capacity building skills, like facilitation, classes, anything that students really want, or workers really want. We do communications and outreach. We do board development, so that includes board retreats. Board has a development fund for themselves, so they can actually go and take it training and be more valuable board members. We also do office and resource libraries. We do have a library hub, so part of our budget goes towards getting books, which are generally requested by the undergraduate students. Administration, so administering opt-out, doing those kind of aspects, including we also bring in a separate auditor to check out books once a year, and staff. So that's what this more sprinkled donut is referring to.
Alright, draft grants. So this is a list of all the grants and projects that we gave draft grants to last year. So SIVA, OS Sensation, Living Coastlines, Brain Awareness Movement, Item and Drama, STAN, Athlete Students Association, Local Persons Service Canada, Engineers Without Borders, Tech Nation, Jack and Band, Native Students, Native Studies Students Association, Law, Women's Studies, Native Studies, and Grad Students. Jasper plays High School Global Cafe. Megan can't.
Start.
which speak of the website. It's right there. So, yeah, that's a general overview. We're always open Monday to Friday to come and talk to some of the staff. It's a really great way to know the organization and know how we can support you or support your life, basically the students that you represent.
I just have a few questions. I don't know, maybe I just didn't catch these numbers, but I was wondering what your average annual budget is, like your total budget, and the number of hours that part-time staff work.
Okay, I got into the second half.
Mission,
you did an
annual
budget.
I give an estimate. It's around 183,000.
I think it's 183,000. Yeah, it goes up every year.
Okay, 183,000?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then staff, so there's three staff. Two of us work 26 hours a week, and the other one works 30.
I saw your expenses, like, the salaries were like 50% of expenses?
Yeah. That's a really regular thing in nonprofit structures. We are unionized. We want to replicate in our funding structures living wages. And without the staff, because we can't really rely on the students to have all the capacity to get everything done, the staff is really integral to like having that support be there for students, so it's not always students supporting other students, which is a lot to ask for.
So the staff aren't students, they're hired
full-time? They can be students, they aren't necessarily like, it's not like we would exclude students from being hired, but they don't have to be students. So right now none of the staff are students.
And as a board member of the staff, or like, the underpinning,
So, what does your board of directors do other than approving budget decisions?
Well, our responsibilities are we have office hours, and so students can come in and talk to us about people-related things. And, we also each have a portfolio that we are a part of, so I'm a part of the outreach portfolio, so my job is to I'm taking part in funding round decisions and postering and doing ad presence for our events and other people's events as well, and just generally doing keeping up the paper.
And all fundamental decisions are made by the board, not by the staff member. So like any of our visioning, any of our long-term is all board directed, not staff directed. Staff is really the like the workforces that will put it into effect.
So we have bi-weekly meetings on each other around 2.5 to 3 hours.
Councillor Lay?
I was wondering on with an obvious
Okay, thanks for the presentation. I was just wondering, I have a few questions, but what are the range of grants that you give out to the various groups and initiatives?
In what sense, range? Like?
Oh, like dollar range?
It depends on what the goal, like who applied and how, like if we want to give that money every, we're going to spend it every semester. So it depends on how we apply. Usually we have more than enough to fund. So usually it maxes out about $2,000, but it can be anywhere. Like people aren't always applying for money, right? Like often you're applying for like a combination of money and in-kind support. Yeah.
Councillor Hodgson?
I was wondering what the percentage of, or on average, what is the percentage of grants you approve?
It's really hard.
That's a really variable number. Like, it's that really depends on like
the amount.
If we can, if it fits within our mandate, like we will try our best to fund it. But that really varies year to year. That's not really something that like I think you could make into a reliable statistic.
Okay. How many granting applications do you roughly receive a year?
Well, per granting, it depends because there's basically two different like. We usually have about 15 for working group, and probably
more.
20. More for venture projects because they're short term, so people apply for more of that money. But that is, it can be very variable.
Yeah. Last year, in both semesters, they varied from 7 and 15. So.
We try to like have a maximum of like 12 working groups, just based on like capacity to support them. because we're not going for quantity as much as like, well, we're going for a balance between like as many as we can support and support well.
So Carson?
I'm wondering if you guys can talk about what your theme is this year and how you're working around that. And also, how did the event of the tour of decolonization go?
Sure. Maybe I'll speak to decolonization first. It was amazing. Heads up, so one of our events for an alternative week of welcome that we do was sort of just a tour of different colonizing and decolonizing structures and forces on campus. And it has been audio recorded, so it's going to be up on our website. Access that information if we weren't able to attend. And tomorrow is actually a debriefing section or a session at the Aboriginal Student Council space at 6:30. It went really well. Our theme for the year is every year part of our capacity goes towards programming. Our focus this year is knowledge economies, which is sort of talking about what's the relationship between the economy and education, what's valued in education, not only content wise, but how people will learn, and sort of how we infuse democratic practice into education itself.
Vice President Kuzma?
Thanks. I just wondered if this is more of a comment, but this is probably my fifth or sixth AAPERG presentation since I've been on Students Council. And I really appreciate, Colton and I were just kind of chatting inside it. I really appreciate it that you guys are consistent in making sure that you present every year. So I think that's very good. Maybe if the other DFUs want to do the same as well. But nonetheless, good presentation, and thanks for being persistent and coming over here, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Vice President Sumar?
Sorry, just a quick question. I know you guys have an AGM coming up, so when is that, and where?
Sure, sorry. Thanks, that's a great thing to add. October 11th at 7 p.m. at Rutherford House. All undergraduate students are members of our program membership, so you're welcome. There's going to be food, the theme is sort of like fancy attire, because it's at Rutherford House, which is not necessarily the apron way of life. So I chose to look. Yeah, so everyone is welcome. We'll also have like all of our working groups are going to be there. It's a good way also to connect with sort of what's going on at AAPERG. So thank you for having me.
That's great.
Pretty good.
Governor Kelly? Oh, sorry.
What's some of the words like can you describe some of like in terms of the things you should use to provide funding for grants? What are some of like the, just like the coolest things you've ever like funded or like a you can if you do like a success story, not like a strategy, like a cool thing you helped fund that was really something amazing.
Yeah.
Very good.
There's an easy one right now, which is Consent Ed, which if people haven't looked Consent Ed up on the internet, please do. It's like it's one of our working groups that deal with sexual health and like consent and boundaries, and they're basically becoming like an international reference for this topic. They're building really rad online resources and getting email basically every week from people across the globe who want to use the stuff they're producing. So that's super rad that we're like supporting a group that is like not only doing a lot of work in Edmonton, but also like doing work that's like really getting picked up all over. Yeah, that's great.
Councillor Lake?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was just wondering, what are some of the big organizational challenges for AAPERG? That's a big problem, but.
Organizational challenges. What do you think as a board member? The actual space. There's always like more that we would like to do than what we have capacity to do. Like AAPERG is never working like partially. We're always sort of going full tilt, which I think is like really what's necessary when there's like so many students on campus who want to do really awesome things. But it does end up that like we sort of are going full speed at all times, which as an organization doesn't necessarily always sustain itself as well as it could, but we're definitely like, a few years ago, all of our staff structures got reorganized so they better support each other. We're trying to like make an institutional sort of environment that supports us being able to like do the amount of work that we do, because we're pretty busy people for part-time work.
Okay.
And like, our board members are all students, right? Like, they're really busy too.
Okay.
Councillor Wynn?
I want to know, like, what's the percentage of students opt out of paper every year, and how does it hurt you guys?
That varies. It's not, I wouldn't be able to give a percent. Like, we're getting less than 50% opt out. It is constantly within our structure to try and make sure it's more accessible, because we want, like, we want people to be opting out if they want to, and so that's why we've gone online. That's why you can fax it and email it, or really expanding it. And we do tons of outreach just around opt out, which always seems a little ridiculous that you're like doing all your outreach to get people to like take money away. But that's really important to us, is that like students know who we are, we know what we support, on campus, and actively like consent or remove themselves depending on how they feel about what we do. So really, it's never more, like, it's usually about 30 to 40 students a semester.
And we budget for that as well.
Yeah, it's definitely included for that.
Last question goes to Councillor Bowie.
Thank you for the presentation. I was just wondering, what's your general criteria for finding
higher education? There's quite a few general criteria. First of all, they need to fit within our mandate and within our, like, that those documents that I shared with you, sort of, like, needs to fit within an anti-prison framework. Yeah. We also do some prioritization around what has strategic value. So even if, like, in a way came to us asking for money, our money doesn't necessarily mean much to them, but to students who are starting from a budget of zero, a budget of $1,000 is huge. So that's another way
that it benefits the community as well, like the direct university or the university community.
And I think, like, underpinning it all is, like, all of these, like, all of our magic, be it anti-oppression, be it accessibility, be it community engagement, is still directed at undergrad students. So even if not, like, we do fund community, like, people working in the community too, but it needs to be explicitly tied to how it supports undergrad students. So that's really important part of that sort of funding structure, is that how will this come back to undergrad students? How will this benefit the community on campus, not and off campus? If anyone wants really specific information about that, all of our guidelines are listed online at aford.org. All of our documentation is there.
We have to be up at 10:04 p.m.
Can you microwave them?
Yeah, we got
and microwave. Please. Yes.
Only microwave them how then.
Remember Petros' platform, guys?
Yeah, we'll microwave something. Yo!
Alright, thanks a lot. Okay. All right, so next up is executive committee reports. Are there any executives wish to make a report? Councillor, Vice President Sumari.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
2 minutes.
All right, so a whole bunch of stuff going on. First things first, tomorrow night we have a comedian coming from New Jersey. His name's Adam Mamawala. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. I have a whole bunch of tickets, free tickets to give away to counselors who are interested in coming out. Tomorrow night, doors open at 7 p.m. in Dinwiddie Lounge. Next up, I just want to let people know that in terms of services, we just had a meeting today, and applications for services are generally up. The Safe Walk application deadline is tomorrow, I believe. So if you're interested, or if people you know are interested, make sure they apply. To note in my report a few things, the message from Dr. Everall is quite important. If you guys would like to plan something for Sustainability Awareness Week, the deadline is Friday. As far as I know, the President and I'm not sure if any other members of the executive are in on this, but we will be able to give it to them on Friday for the pie throwing. So I believe they're raising a whole bunch of money so you can see us get pies put in our faces. It's going to be awesome. Also, the Vice President Academic and I went to an early detection software meeting yesterday to basically look at students who are in danger academically or sort of behaviorally, I guess. So the university is considering producing some software. So if you guys have any questions about that, make sure to ask me question period. I'm not sure how much time I have left, but there's a whole bunch of athletic stuff going on this weekend. I skipped it right here, so if you're interested, make sure to talk to me after. There's a couple of hockey games, football game, and a soccer game going on, as well as the turkey trot on Saturday. Other things. Last but not least.
Sorry, time's up.
That's fine.
Vice President Kuzmu.
Thanks. A couple things. First, in regards to me hosting the PC Capital Region Caucus, it had to get canceled, rescheduled, I guess, last minute, due to all these unfortunate deaths. So that's going to happen to me in the future. I'm hoping to get the opportunity to present to other provincial parties and show them the Capital Region campus. Second thing is, external advocacy team. We're trying to get things into motion. We're going to have Bobby training next week. I'm trying to get those who are interested in the program to arrange one-on-one games with me for 15 minutes or so in my office, and just so I can hear what your expectations are and what you want to do and what you want to achieve. So keep in mind for that, that's the dates mixed that are in my report. And the last thing is the NP Annual Provincial Convention. One of my goals this year is to kind of go to more of these provincial and federal conventions if I have the opportunities there for me. I went to the NP convention, my first of hopefully many other provincial party conventions, and it was good. It was, I found that I had a chance to network with some other MLAs and MPs, and hopefully get some more meetings out of that, and I had a chance to meet Tom O'Care, which was neat, and I saw some other old friends there as well. So, upcoming conventions, I think it's the PC and Wild Rose, and then we'll see what's going on with the Liberals, because they have now some stuff going on. But in terms of costs, it was relatively cheap. Registration was like $20, I think, $25, and parking, but that's pretty much it. So, yeah, so that's. Oh, and I went as an observer, so I was able to vote. So I didn't vote for Tom. But good time, so that's pretty much it for my report. Thanks.
Any other reports? President Yamaguchi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to start off just, I wrote a little piece here about Premier Lougheed, and I thought that, you know, whatever your political views are on what he did and whatnot, I think we can respect him as a student union alumni, who is our president and also a gateway editor back in the day. So I'm also not a huge fan of moments of silence, but I thought we could take 5 seconds to do a quick one if that's okay with you guys.
So. It's your time.
All right, time's up. A few things to talk about. There's the turkey trot happening this weekend. So tomorrow is actually the last day to sign up for this. What is the turkey trot? It's for the United Way fundraising. It's a big U of A event that happens every year. You can run an 8-kilometer or a 4-kilometer run or a 4-kilometer walk. So there's something for everyone. I've had some council meetings this week. I thought they've been going really well. My apologies to Councilor Baddock. I missed the meeting. I'm sorry, but we'll get that rescheduled. And the last thing I want to talk about that is huge is our friends down south had a very large event today at the University of California, Irvine. It's a fair record.
Did they shut up? Oh.
Shut up.
It's not official.
So, just want to let you guys know. Good for them. Congrats to our friends at UCI. And that's all I'll say about that. Other than that, there's a student alumni council being built right now, and I think they're going to look for campus visit program people first, but if you guys are interested, let me know to see what you can do. And I had a whole bunch of UVA admin-ish meetings this week. They were mostly pretty boring, but yeah. Oh, I also took part in the BSA lift up, which was sweet, and the Heroes for Health Fair today, and I got to give people apples, so that's more fun here.
Okay. Committee and boards. Are there any committees or boards? Councillor Mills.
As council name determined, our walk retreat date is going to be October 26th. And that is the Halloween weekend, so it's going to be Halloween themed. So those are planning your costumes now. They will be expected. And then schedule some stuff we'll follow for that retreat. And then we also have
okay, are there, Councillor Smith.
I just want to give an update for bylaw. We
on Thursday we are going to be talking about putting together some principles for attendance requirements for council. If anyone is curious and wants to come by and give them their 2 cents, I'd really appreciate it. We'll also be sending out both the statistics of the last couple of years that Natalie generously put together, as well as what we have, just so we don't run into too many, an hour, like half an hour of grammatical issues at next meeting. So please take the time to look at that.
Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Not much to report besides what was in my my report, which you can see in the package. I had an individual come to me yesterday already saying, hey, come to me yesterday saying, hey, I'm interested in potentially running for the library position, which is awesome. Like way, like so early on. So it's never too early or too late to start thinking about running for these positions. So if you're interested in potentially running,
any other committees or board members? Okay, so move into the question period. Are there any questions? Councilor Wynn.
Can I have like a comment instead of a question? Is that okay?
Not really.
Question for President.
Sure.
Why are you constantly submitting your report late?
It is question period, and that was
okay. So thank you for the great question, and thank you for once again holding me accountable as an SA exec. I would like to point out that a number of the executive have made reports, and one of the executive has never put it in on time.
Sorry, what is your record like in terms of submitting council reports on as president, but also as VPSL?
That's okay. Not a correct use of a point of information.
So to continue my point, one thing that's actually bad I need to fix is I had all my council reports on time until last week, so far this year, and the reason that I need to fix this is because I have an 8 a.m. lab on Fridays, and I used to wake up at like 6 or 7 in the morning on Friday morning to my report before the 8 a.m. deadline, but that's not working so well that I have an 8 a.m. lab, so I'll try and do it Thursday night and get mad at me if I don't have it on time next week. But also, please encourage the other executives. Thank you.
Councilor Babick.
This question is for the VPSL. What is the deal with comedian?
The comedian? It's a great question. So basically what's going on is this gentleman from New Jersey, Adam Amawala, is the first comedian that we're bringing in. We're hoping to bring in a whole slew of comedians throughout the year. As our senior manager of programming and venues puts it, it's her sort of piece on mental health, because laughter is the best medicine. He is coming to our campus obviously tomorrow. The doors open at 7. Tickets are $10, but because this is the first sort of comedy night that we're doing, we want to draw a lot of students in. So if councilors are interested in coming out, we are giving away a set number of pairs of tickets for councilors. So for example, Councilor Babick, if you would like to come, I'll give you a pair of tickets. If Councilor Chowdhury also wants to come, I'll give her a pair of tickets, things like that. Like I said, it's a very limited number, so we still are trying to make money on the comedian. But as this is our first event, we'd like to draw in a crowd for the next comedian also. He's hilarious. If you check out my council report, there's a couple of different YouTube links. I think he's awesome. So, I don't know if you wanted to know anything else.
I'm just wondering more to the impetus behind this movement.
Sure. So basically, I don't think programming in venues is sort of moving away from certain types of programming that they've done in the past, but they're trying to diversify and widen their range of different events that they want to offer to U of A students. So in the last few years, last year, for example, one of the sort of newer events on campus was to bring some singer-songwriters to play on Substate. This is something that's been amplified this year, and there's sort of a series of singer-songwriters that are coming to the U of today. There's only been a couple this week. But like I said, the department is looking at diversifying the programming so that we can make sure that it appeals to the widest range of students possible.
Councillor Pucci-Cazell.
My question is for Vice President Sumar. So how much are you budgeting for these comedians?
Honestly, that is something that I don't know because that doesn't fall under my budget line. That falls under the programming and venues budget line. So Vice President Shima might know a little bit more. I can get council more details on the budget if you'd like. I'll send that out to council as soon as I get it.
Councillor Wei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for Vice President Seymour. Would you be able to elaborate on the UPass, or your update on UPass? You mentioned that ETS is proposing potential value-added services to justify the
price. Sure. So I was planning on making a presentation, hopefully at the next council meeting. But just to give council a quick update on the UPass, ECS is being very sticky about the position on $170 for the UPass for 2014, starting then, and then moving up by the sort of whatever they want, the potential to move up according to the single adult cash grant that they have. The value adds that they threw in were, it almost seemed like they were trying to sort of say that this is the price that you guys have set, what if we add in these things? Would that make the UPass price 170 sit a little bit easier with you? So that included talking to the municipalities that were around Edmonton, so Spruce Grove, Fort Saskatchewan, and I feel like I'm missing Stony Plain, to get them to buy into the UPass program. That was one of the value adds. The value adds that the student associations are looking at potentially doing, the first one is potentially looking at reducing their replacement fee for stickers. So if students lose their UPass or lose their one card. Currently they have to pay the full cost of the UPass. So what we want to look at doing is figure out if we can provide that replacement at a lower cost than the full price. Other student associations do this, so that's something that we want to look at doing. However, we want to make sure that that's not costing students additional money, basically. So we want to make sure that that cost is being eaten by ETS or maybe by the university, but not by the student association. Other value adds, something that the GSA has proposed is to the current range in terms of opting out is 80 kilometers outside of municipalities. What they want to change that to is they want to change it so that it's relative to the bus stop as opposed to the municipality. So they want to limit it to about 5 to 10 kilometers from a bus stop. So basically, if you, for example, live 5 or 10 kilometers away from the nearest transit bus stop, that you would be able to opt out. The difficult thing about this is that this is something that we tried to do in the past, but we were unsuccessful. The main reason is because there is a belief from the transit providers that students might put in their home address as opposed to their temporary address. So for example, my parents lived in somewhere in somewhere not here, and I lived in residence, that I could put in my address as my parents' home address and be able to opt out of the address, basically. So that is the belief from ETS and the other transit providers, but that's something that we have to try to chip away at in the next few months.
Councillor Carson.
This question is also for PSL. I'm wondering if you could expand a little bit on the conversation you had about software. What would
sure.
that, that radar?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, what that early detection software is about, and Vice President Academic Chairman might have a few things to add, so I might defer to him here. But basically, we are looking at getting some software that was initially produced in Cornell and has been very successful at UBC. Basically, the focus of the meeting that we had was mostly on academic troubles that students are having. So for example, if President Yamagishi wasn't doing so well in a few of his classes, he had failed or had not shown up to one of his midterms, and that was something that was recurring in multiple classes. Instructors could make an entry online on this software to say that President Yamagishi might be in academic trouble. So to make sure that before he gets a big fat F on his transcript, that we do something about that, so that he can go see an academic advisor, he could potentially drop out of class, etc., etc. In terms of other issues, we also want to look at potentially sort of behavioral issues within the classroom or outside the classroom. So, for example, if Vice President Shellen is going through some hardship, an instructor or a university employee can potentially enter in his information so that other people are sort of made aware. Obviously, this information would be kept confidential. They are looking into sort of different options, and Vice President Shellen and I had a number of different questions for them. For example, one of the questions that I had was, would some of this information be passed on to employees in residence, so that if a student was living in residence, their residence assistant or their residence coordinator or their floor coordinator could make sure that if this person was suffering from academic hardship or other hardships, that they're looked after. So there's somebody close to them or in their community who knows that the person is suffering. So, I don't know that.
Yeah.
President Yamagishi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Board of Governors representative. I was just wondering what ended up happening at the Board of Safety and
Environment. Bishai, absolutely. Yes. During the open session, we just had our community safety update. We talked about, we updated the terms of reference and talked about the work plan. I had approved that. That was about it. It wasn't a terribly productive meeting in that sense. But we did discuss some things in the closed session, which I will be talking with you about later. Thanks for the question.
That's all I have on my speakers list, so we'll move on. Oh, Councilor Wynn.
I have a question for VP External. I want to know how many people have signed up so far for the lobby training team, and how much money will you be spending on them? You seem to have a lot of activities going on.
Cool. Thanks for the good question. So I'll answer the first one because that's the easiest. How much money is going to cost? Not much at all. I don't really foresee any huge expenditures. A lot of it's kind of volunteering. So possible expenditures might be coffee, maybe a pizza. We have some volunteer appreciation of some sorts. That's kind of all I foresee for now. In terms of how many people signed up, I want to say 40, 50 people on my email list so far, the lobby team itself. But again, reply backs and people seem very interested is not as much. But I'd say I see 10, 20 potentials who are really awesome. So that still seems engaged and interested in that concept. So I can always use more.
Did you call success or tell us?
It's a little too early to tell, but I've considered it a success so far. Anyone
who's
still interested, please come on.
Just so you know, I'm being a little bit more lenient today because there isn't a lot on the agenda and everything, but normally if there was a lot on the agenda, there'd be a lot of stuff going on right now that wouldn't be okay, such as people talking in between when other people are talking, such as people asking multiple questions in question period, such as people talking when they're not recognized, and such as people addressing people without using their proper title. So again, I'm being a little bit more lenient today because the agenda is not too big, but be aware of that because I won't be lenient as soon as the agenda does call for that. So, are there any further questions? Councilor Babbitt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for the Speaker. When will we be having that training session that you alluded to in the week back?
Sure, that's a point of parliamentary inquiry then, and it's actually a responsibility because I decided that I wasn't going to do the training session until we did our fall retreat,
And so Council Administration Committee is planning the fall retreat, so I can let possibly Councilor Mills answer that if she wants, if they've decided yet.
Yeah, we will have a mock council and that training session led by the speaker at fall retreat, so if you're doing that, definitely do attend the fall retreat. And also on the schedule, if you want to know a certain amount of time, and you can plan to be there for that
time. Councilor Milner? Perhaps, if individuals are interested in influencing the date of council retreat, they could email Councillor Mills after the meeting, or else if you wanted me to run a separate training session, I could do that outside of council meeting if I get enough interest. I could also sit down with you like one-on-one if there's still questions that you have, but if council wants me to run like another training session outside of that, I could also do that. Councillor Carson?
Oh, sorry.
President Yamagishi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the chair of CAP, but more for the committee, I guess. I was wondering if you guys would be interested in possibly having a bowling night or a varsity athletics attendee.
Yeah, so that did come up in our meeting today. I didn't see that in our report, but we were discussing having council social events, so going to the varsity is coming out. Or whatever council as a whole wants to do, and then also having a social event after retreat if you wish to attend. So, yeah.
And also, just right now, I just thought we can send out a doodle to everyone to see what they're interested in, what kind of events they'd like to have us do. Money is tight, so we've got to figure out something we can do for free altogether. But yeah, if you have any suggestions at all, please email Councillor.
Vice President Sumar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the chair of CAC. I was wondering if this is something that we talked about last year at council, but I was wondering if there was any interest in organizing something for Trick or Eat this year as run by CAC speaker.
That hasn't been planned yet, but I don't see why not. So would you be able to elaborate on that event for counselors who aren't familiar?
Sure. So
I'm referring to
that. Okay, sure. Cool. So for those counselors who don't know exactly what Trick or Eat is, basically on Halloween, volunteers go around and collect food donations for the food bank as opposed to getting candy. So that's why it's Trick or Eat as opposed to Trick or Treat. I'll defer to President Yamagishi.
I think a lot of student groups on campus do group trick or treating, so it's a pretty cool way. They have, I think, prizes that go to the groups that raise the most weight in food. So it would be kind of cool if council wanted to get involved that way. Or help out one of those other student groups.
Kate, that brings us past our first 15 minutes. I have no names on the speakers list, but I just saw a placard. But we'll move on, unless I see five placards to extend. Three, four, five, one, two, three, four, five. Okay, second 15 minutes. So I'm going to try this as a new rule. When we go into our second 15 minutes, I'm going to limit questions to 1 minute, and I'm going to limit responses to 3 minutes, and then in our third question period, it'll be 30 seconds and 2 minutes. So here you have 1 minute to ask your question and 3 minutes to answer it. Councilor Cucci DeVille.
So my question is for VP Sumar. So in light of the recent
events that are pre-husband girlfriend? Is there any plans to maybe take it back?
That's a good question. That's something that I've already talked to members of the programming team about. I'm not saying we're going to do it, I'm not saying we're not going to do it. It's something that we have to look into in terms of the constraints that we're put under, basically. The biggest one being funding. So we have to make sure that we have the funds to do something like this. Last year, to give people a rough estimate, budgeted for 5,000 students, the budget was approximately $90,000 to run the event. Obviously, all that money doesn't come from the SU, that money comes from sponsors, which is what we have to look for. So, if and when we find the sponsors, then we have to go into the process of working on the logistics of the event. If council has any suggestions for how to run the event better than it has been run in the last little while, please let me know. One of the ideas that is on the table is to move it a little bit further back to potentially be closer to the end of the school year as sort of like a closing of the year type of event. So let me know what you think of that. Council is obviously one of the soundboards that I use for certain ideas that are being brought forward. So if you have any thoughts, comments, suggestions, whatever, let me know. But I'll keep council appraised as to what the plans are for potentially breaking the record for the most people playing dodgeball.
Councilor Champagne.
My question is just to Vice President Suma. On that note, it is a little naive, but last year it was free, right? We got a free t-shirt. Is it too much to say maybe like a tune for participant? And that way, you know, it's still cheap and it helps us get a little bit of money rolling.
That's a great idea. On that, one of the ideas that I have for breaking record this year is not to charge students to come to the game, but rather to have them make a donation to the food bank. So for example, if the record we set is for 6,500 students, and we hit that number and each person brings in a toonie, that's $13,000 that's going directly to the food bank. So I think it's a good idea to roll breaking record in with something else that we want to try to do. That is something that we can definitely take into consideration. But at the same time, obviously, we're not going to make the game like cost prohibitive or something. It'll be like $5 or less if we end up going with that. So that's just another thought we have for breaker records.
Okay, that exhausts the speakers list. So we'll move on to board and committee business, which there is none. General orders, there is none. Is there any business from the floor? Seeing none, then I will do final attendance. President Yamagishi.
Present.
Vice President Schelling. Vice President Kuzmu.
Present.
Vice President Chima.
Present.
Vice President Sumar.
Yo.
Governor Kelly.
Present.
Councillor Milner.
Present.
Councillor Kim. Councillor McGinn.
Here.
Councillor Kinda. Councillor Mills.
Present.
Councillor Hanwell.
Present.
Ms. Black.
Present.
Councillor Lay.
Present.
Councillor Holt.
Here.
Councillor Smith.
Here.
Councillor Curlew. Councillor Lang.
Here.
Councillor Crone.
Present.
Councillor Babick.
Present.
Councillor Ritz.
Yeah.
Councillor Carson.
Yeah, present.
Councillor Chaudhry?
Present.
Councillor Champagne?
Yep.
Councillor Jackson? Councillor Cucci-Cazell?
What's up?
Councillor Wynn?
Present.
Councillor Pham?
Present.
Councillor Bowie?
Present.
Councillor Monfries?
Present.
Councillor Hodgson?
I don't know these.
Vote. 7:45.